The main difference that comes with extrusion is that in extrusion, we have the complete cooking of the process. So that helps with the digestibility. The product will be more digestible. Plus, it is more nutrient dense because extrusion can help, you know, pack in more of the fat and meat and all protein, everything, without affecting the quality of the pellets.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by WiseNetics. I am Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing the latest insights and discussions from the feed science industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today is a great pleasure to host a good friend and person that I know for quite some time, Dr. Michael Joseph. He is a assistant professor and extension specialist at the Department of Poultry Science, prestige Department of Poultry Science at North Carolina State University. So, Michael, welcome to the Feed Science Podcast.
Thank you, Carlos, and thanks for having me. And I'm excited to be on this show and talk about, my experience and knowledge in extrusion processing and how it applies to feed. And I hope to, have a good conversation with you to take it forward.
So thanks, Michael, then for that explanation. And great career, great work. So why don't we go a little bit more in depth of what you're doing at NC State that follows a little bit of what you did in your graduate studies on the extrusion, which mainly is involved with feed processing. So tell us a little bit more about your work on that you're doing at NC State related at this topic.
I was, like I told, my food science background, and here at NC State, when I started working with feed, so we know that at K-State, there is a big feed program, and I knew about the feeds, but how to use the different ingredients primarily as a feed options for the byproducts. So that was the thing that I was concentrating on. The idea was to use extrusion processing, but some of the processes would be, not to use the suitable technology, I would say, not only extrusion processing. I would not bind myself to that because of my different industry background and working with different kinds of processes. So I was very comfortable with that. So I would go out to the manufacturers or processors, mainly the small and medium processors who require, a little more help than, say, the bigger companies on how to utilize their byproducts. So they would come up with whatever leftover bones or wing tips or anything to what can we do, or fish skin and all of those kind of stuff. And then the challenge in those things was that they would not want to invest in something high tech because of the lack of, say, resources or manpower or money investment, capital investment. So I had to come up with some of these things which would really help them, but the capital investment or the investment in human resource would not be great. They could do whatever they are doing. Within that setup, they could, do the they could find solutions. So that is what I try to do.
Perfect. No, that's very good information. And of course, our audience, like us, please give the famous live a thumbs up for this podcast. So Michael, so it seems extrusion, I know, is a big part of your work and everything you do in extension. So why don't we take a little bit more deep into the technical, because I know that especially from our feed processing industry, some people always kind of have that confusion. Should I be pelleting? Should I be extruding to make feed? So tell us a little bit about from your background, what will be the main difference between extrusion and pelleting?
Yeah, so yeah, that's the very basic question that you asked, and that is good. And so pelleting is a very common thing in the feed industry. Pelleting is basically a compaction process. The ingredients are compacted using heat and pressure, and the cooking that is involved in that is not as good, means is not up to the level of that what is achieved in extrusion processing. That is because the pelleting process itself is the mash is preconditioned, and then that preconditioned mash then is pushed through a die, and the die would be compacting the product, the pellet. It would be making the pellet. So the temperature of preconditioning, or not preconditioning, it is called conditioning, would vary between 65 degrees Celsius to say 85 degrees Celsius, depending on what is the mash. Or so, for example, for the pig, for the small pigs or the nursery pigs, it would be the feed formulation would be conditioned at a lower temperature, whereas for the finishing diet it would be for the conditioned at a higher temperature. So depending on the formulation, also the conditioning temperature varies. But the main difference that comes with extrusion is that in extrusion we have the complete cooking of the process, so that helps with the digestibility. The product will be more digestible. Plus, it is more nutrient dense because extrusion can help pack in more of the fat and meat and all protein, everything, without affecting the quality of the pellets. So, and also if we look at the fish feeds or the aquaculture feeds, the one thing that extrusion can do is the density control. So we can have the floating feed, slowly sinking feeds, and the sinking feed. So all these kind of, by just controlling the screw profile and the process itself. So that is a bigger advantage. But the choice whether the product has to be extruded versus whether it has to be pelleted depends on the nutrient requirements of, say, the animal to which we are catering. So monogastrics, like, say, the pigs or even the poultry, they are all, they can do with the pelleted feeds. But, say, fish, pets, all of these, they require extruded feeds because they have to be highly digestible and more nutrient dense. So those kind of things, differentiate what the product has to be done to make it an animal feed for a certain group of animals versus, say, for pets or the aquaculture.
And that's always, like I said, like the typical question that people ask. And as you know, I also do extension, and I get this question all the time. So great for our audience to understand that. But so then, talking about extrusion, tell us a little bit more about the role of the heat, the moisture, and shear in extrusion. I know you touched a little bit of base on that, but since a lot of probably our audience is more focused on pelleting in a way, to get a little bit more knowledge of the extrusion process itself.
Yeah, so even in pelleting, there is some amount of heat coming through the steam, and also some pressure is developed in the die when the material passes through the die. But here in extrusion process, it is like you can say a high stake game between in balancing the heat, moisture, and the mechanical energy or the mechanical force. So specific mechanical energy is what we are trying to control in extrusion processing. Specific mechanical energy is the energy that goes into per unit of the product. It can be per kg, per ton, or whatever unit we are looking at. So moisture is one of the big things in extrusion. We can run the ingredients at a higher moisture. And suppose we want to cook a product more, we want to cook it more, so we can add a little more moisture, so that will gelatinize the starch more and the product can be cooked without burning it. Now, if we want, say, more expansion, say, for example, for a floating feed, so maybe we can add more shear shear will come through by changing the screw profile of the of the extruder to provide more shear, and the product can expand. So these are some of the things that we have to balance to get an optimized product, and that is, and also we try to minimize the time the material, because it's a high temperature short time process, HTST process, so we try to minimize the time the material remains at a high temperature, just to, you know, protect heat labile nutrients or vitamins.
And that's something that you touch very well. But first, let me just be sure that our audience, if they have any questions, please comment there, put it in the comment section. We'll be sure to get with Dr. Joseph. But going back, Michael, so high temperature, of course, in the pelleting process, a lot of some ingredients are sensitive to heat, and of course, vitamins and enzymes. And some people always have that question: how is difference if they're sensible to heat in the pelleting? Will that be the same on the extrusion process, being a little bit of a different process itself? What will be your opinion on that?
Yeah. See, heat sensitive vitamins or any nutrients would be heat sensitive. Even in the pelleting process and the extrusion, because extrusion runs on a much higher temperatures. So definitely just plain thinking would be that there would be more degradation of the enzymes and it also kills the anti-nutrition or reduces the anti-nutritional factors, so to say, because of the high temperature. So in a way, it causes the same amount or a similar amount of nutrient degradation for heat labile ingredients, but there is some additional benefits that we get from extrusion processing, like, you know, deactivation of these lipases and the other phytic acid or anti-nutritional factors. Those kind of things are also there.
So it enhances nutrition, of course, but let me ask you this. How does that relate extrusion from a feed safety component and shelf life? You know, of course, you know, when you think about shelf life, extrusion, the key process to make pet food and dry pet food, of course. How is that? Because, you know, with pelleting, sometimes you have that thinking not to store it for a long time, and that feed safety component. So tell us a little bit about the advantages of extrusion from a feed safety perspective, and then, of course, handling shelf life for products.
Yeah, so feed safety is and shelf life, they are both very important components for the feed industry. And in the feed industry, feed safety is just not a goal, it is a non-negotiable requirement. So, and extrusion can be a frontline defense in that, in a way, because the extrusion has the preconditioning. So preconditioning, you know, already partially cooks the product, and the temperatures would be above 95 degrees Celsius, and then it so it deactivates the enzyme. So it's already and when that preconditioned product comes into the extruder, the temperatures would be, let's say, over 120 degrees Celsius. So and with the moisture and the pressure, so it would be it is a validated kill step for, you know, some of the microbes like Salmonella and E. coli. So maintaining a temperature above 95 degrees Celsius in the presence of moisture for even a few seconds would, you know, kill these bacteria. So that would help from the food feed safety point of view. Now when we look at the shelf life, So we know that shelf life, in a different way, if we say it is, we are testing the freshness, and it's a race against time, how fresh a product can remain over a period of time. So lipid oxidation is one of the major factors that can affect the shelf life. So high temperatures in extrusion processing, that can be, deactivate the lipase enzyme, which breaks the, you know, fat into the fatty acids, and free fatty acids are formed and they oxidize, and so all those kind of things can be reduced, and it will help the product to not go rancid. So by denaturing these enzymes, and plus we cook the food, so cooking also, you know, helps retain better shelf life, and it also reduces the anti-nutritional factors. So some of these things, plus because it's a dry product, so primarily less than 10% moisture content. Same with the feed pellet also, but some of these additional, you know, deactivating the enzymes and lipases and all those, they add to the shelf life of the product.
And that's great information, because, you know, in a way, there's always that concern. And that gets me thinking, based on what you talk about, the high temperatures in the extruder, higher than pelleting, for example. There's always that concern on the extrusion process, people that make animal feed, that the protein will denature. From the soybean meal, for example, any other feed ingredient. Tell us a little bit about that. What will be your opinion on that? Do we see any denaturing of protein in extrusion or not? I mean, I personally, I have also that question.
So if you look at any of these ingredients, suppose we are consuming, say, a food, it has the starch, protein, fat, everything. So our body will, you know, break it down. So that breaking down of protein, or you can say it is the denaturing of the protein. So definitely, yes, the high temperatures would denature the protein. That helps with the absorption or increases. So whatever the body has to do, the denaturing, it is already done already. So it helps with the digestibility. So yeah, the protein is denatured. Even starch is gelatinized. So that is how it works.
So more digestible food for animals and, of course, humans, because we know that extrusion also is for human products. So that's great information. And please, for our audience, if you learned something new today, please share the video. We appreciate that on that. So as we continue along, and we did talk a little bit about, I was talking about protein from soybean meal, a little bit in that, and I know that you work with bioproducts, and right now there's, of course, a movement of alternative protein source as insect meal and algae. Tell us a little bit about that, how they're moving away from traditional soybean meal and fish meal there from an extrusion perspective.
So the sustainability, when we look at sustainability and circular economy, now these are alternate proteins like insect meal or the algae. These are all coming into picture. So what happens is the insect meal, suppose they are all high in fat. So fat acts as a lubricant. So we, the nutritionist, would decide on a formulation. Maybe it has X amount of insect meal or all these. So when the product has more, when the product rheology changes because of these components of the new ingredients that are added, so we have to rework on the maybe the process, which was maybe going smoothly when we are adding some other kind of fat or all of those kind of things. So I would say that these change the rheology, which rheology means how the dough flows inside the extruder barrel. So when the fat is high, so it is it has a more lubricating effect, which means there will be less friction generated inside the extrusion process, and that may affect the degree of cooking. So less friction, so less cooking in a way, we can say. So we have to adjust the process. How to adjust the process is that we can create more obstructions in the flow. So we can change the shear that is, or the force that the product is encountering within the barrel by changing the screw elements and adding more restrictive elements like the kneading block, etc., so that the product gets to remain a little more inside the barrel, and it gets more chance to get cooked. And so it's always a challenge when we have all these kind of new products, because generally any process would like consistency. When we add all these new ingredients, it definitely breaks that smooth flow, and we have to, you know, look at the output that is coming and do the changes, whether in the process parameters or whether in the screw profile itself.
So is it probably good to say for our audience that if you're making a feed formulation and use a traditional ingredient, let's say for aqua, you do fish meal, soybean, if you move to algae and insect meal, you definitely need to adjust your extruder. And so that's key information. I do believe so from an operator perspective. So Being said that, of course, one of the key trends that you see out there too is the incorporation of functional ingredients like probiotics. So is extrusion safe to do that? I mean, or will they be deteriorated, those probiotics in the extrusion process, due to all this friction and high temperatures?
Yeah, so probiotics, when we look at it, so we know that it's all a high temperature process. So heat is an enemy of any heat labile product, and probiotics are one of them. So how to incorporate probiotics into the process, in the extrusion process or extruded feed. So the way it can be done is that the product is, like I told, extrusion can help with density control. So we make a product without the probiotic in that, with a more porous, you know, structure. So it is a little more expanded, and then we can do a vacuum coating with a probiotic solution after the product has been cooled. So generally, probiotics, generally vacuum coating is done at around 0.2 atmospheres. And but if there is something more, you know, very critical kind of ingredient, that has to be vacuum incorporated, so it can go further in the vacuum can be further increased to have that. So when the vacuum will pull out the air, so that space is taken up by these probiotics, which is mixed with, say, oil or some other solution. It gets into those pores. That is how it is done. And then slowly, say within 4 or 5 minutes, slowly the vacuum is again, you know, removed slowly. So, and it comes back to the atmospheric pressure. And by that time, you know, the product will have the probiotics, you know, in the product itself, because vacuum has helped in getting that through.
And that's key. I mean, I didn't think about that, and I thought it was probably added and had to adjust the extruder, but that's with the vacuum coater. That's fantastic information. So
it's time for our famous three.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
Great information that you have shared today. I know we're coming to the end of the podcast, but before we leave, we finish today. I know that our audience is always eager to learn more about different topics. Of course, extrusion is a big one worldwide. So what will be your favorite or your to-go resource, book or website that you would recommend somebody that wants to look, that is not an expert, that wants to become one, to learn more about extrusion itself?
Yeah, so just for extrusion itself, because I'm sitting in my office, so I can just show that I have this Extruders in Food Application, very basic book by Dr. Mia Riaz from Texas A&M, and it gives the extrusion, you know, the hardware and the chemistry, how things work inside the extruder barrel. So this is a very basic book and very good information for anyone who just wants to get introduced or to even refresh some of the concepts that are there in extrusion processing.
And I agree, because I have the same book, actually, yes, by Dr. Riaz, and a great knowledgeable person, too, on this topic. Right, right. So thank you for that. Also, a little bit thinking about outside of extrusion, if you're a young professional trying to learn more overall, what do you recommend them to look information for as overall outside of your topic? Any particular book or resources that could help maybe make a professional, young professional, be more successful?
Well, there may be a lot of options, but I think I have looked at the Atomic Habits by James Clear. So in that, it tells, you know, the different how small things change. Okay, working on small things, they can keep, you know, bring a big impact. So when we work in the field of feed or extrusion processing or byproduct utilization, when there is change in raw materials and when there is change in some other conditions, so we are constantly trying to optimize the product or the process. So similarly, it is a reminder that massive breakthroughs are not like something big happens at once, but yeah, small changes, whether it's in a research lab or in an industry or even in, for the personal growth. So that will help, you know, to, you know, grow further. Small things add up.
So the Atomic Habits, that's a great recommendation. I'm writing it down so I could also look for it.
Yeah.
Great. No, that's great advice. And to finalize, you're in the academic background. What do you think could help young professionals, help them be more successful now these days? What would you recommend somebody, it could be in the industry or in the academic world, to be a young professional to be more successful?
Yeah, so everyone may be having their own way to look at these things, but because I have the industry background, extension, academics, everything is a mix. So when I look at it from a scientist viewpoint, so there has to be, you know, curiosity, what, why, how. So, and to not just keep going at whatever is being done, we have to challenge those kind of limits. Okay, what will happen if I do this? So that curiosity, the scientist part or the researcher part would take, you know, would be good for them. But that is all research. Now, from the extension hat that I wear and you also wear, and we know that that is just a part of the solution. It has to be taken to the public. So for that, we have the knowledge. We did all those research or and the improvements or changes according to the situation. And then it has to be communicated to the masses. So communication is, again, the skill. So it has to be made as simple as possible for a layman. It has to be, when we talk to a scientist, we have to become like a scientist. Like when we are talking to you know, the maintenance people, we have to be like a little more engineer like something, so to suit the audience. So communication is also the key. Just the research part or the curiosity is just one part. Communication plus curiosity, I think.
Great advice, and I definitely agree that you have to see it like that. I appreciate it. So with that, Michael, thank you very much today for joining our podcast. I think there's a lot of great information there for our audience on extrusion. So with that, thank you again. And this concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Please, for our audience, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated to our future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable to us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.